All right, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And we're joined in studio by the entire cast of Loretto Community School Milford. Well, it's not quite, but it feels like it, because they are hosting an 80s musical, and it is Footloose, as you would know. It's really, really popular, and it's running from Tuesday the 14th. It's on for two nights, isn't it? Anyway, we'll get to that in a moment, and we'll tell you where you can get your tickets. But before we get to hear from the students, let's chat to some of the teachers. Anita Sweeney, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
Great, thanks. Thanks good very
stuff.
Much for having us.
Great for calling up. And Brenda Crawford, how are you?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. How long have you been working on this?
Well, I suppose our audition started back with Anita and I, and Roisin is with us as well, our music teacher, Roisin Holmes. We started way back in February time. So we take them at lunchtimes, we do auditions, try and run through all the year groups. And then, as I said, then the cream rises to the top, and here they are. And we also have our fantastic core cast back at the school. So once we finish our auditions, we cast them, and they have been working really hard since, giving up all their Friday afternoons and their Saturdays and evenings, and all other extracurricular are on hold for the moment.
So. Yeah, and Anita, these shows, you know, they're held to a very high standard, aren't they? I mean, in terms of the dedication, the effort that goes into it, the rehearsals and the performances, like, you know, people going to see this are going to see a really good representation of Footloose.
They certainly are, Greg. We like to think that our show is a very high premium school show. We have around 100 of a cast, which is huge, a huge undertaking. Footloose itself is an absolutely wonderful musical because, of course, it has all the big numbers, big choreography, and it also has a really beautiful story at its heart as well. A story of loss and pain and human resilience, which is absolutely beautiful. We're working on some of those key scenes yesterday and they were absolutely beautiful. So we're really, really excited to bring it to the stage.
Fantastic stuff. Okay. You wouldn't do so without some of the cast. The lead character, Wren, Mark James Bradley. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
I'm good. How are you?
Good stuff. How are you enjoying the whole process?
Yeah, it's really good. We've all come together and we're making really good progress here with our scenes, and we're just working really well together. And I wouldn't have any complaints about how we're going.
Excellent. Great. I love the confidence. Yeah. Let's hope you can back it up. No, I'm not listening. Hannah Lynch, Ariel. Isn't that right? Are you there, Hannah?
Yeah.
How are you getting on?
I'm all right, thank you.
What's your role? Talk to me about what's Ariel's story arc?
So
you don't have to answer all of that. I'm just trying to sound like I know what I'm on about.
Ariel is the preacher's daughter, so she's very rebellious.
Do you feel you're being typecast?
Not quite.
Did people push you forward for this role or anything? No.
It's a very good character to play because she's very, you know, she goes against everything that her father wants her to do.
It sounds quite familiar. Ryan Quinn, you're playing Willard, Ryan. Talk to me about your role.
Yeah, my person's called Willard, and he's not the smartest cookie, but he's very fun.
Do you feel you've been typecast? No,
he's very good to act.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. Is this your first acting role?
First one, yeah.
Brilliant stuff. And is it the same for you, Ariel? Hannah, is this your first role as well?
No, this is my third.
Okay, what about you, Mark James?
This is my third school musical.
Right, cool. So it's a nice mixture of experience and new names coming through. Mm. Is Rusty here? Lucy? Mm-hmm. How are you getting on?
Talk to me about Rusty. Rusty is very comedic character, obviously a pleasure to play. Very positive, smitten for
someone
Willard.
Someone says to me that Hannah should have got that role, no?
No, she's very positive and very bubbly. Just honestly such a pleasure to play.
Great. Because a good character makes the whole experience more fun, doesn't it?
Definitely very charismatic.
Yeah. Bobby, are you there? Bobby, come on over.
Yeah.
Bobby's the Reverend. Yeah. So is this a religious role? Come in a bit closer to the mic, Rev.
It is a religious role, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a preacher, yeah.
Okay, and how's that going for you?
Yeah, good. I'm...
Do you have to sing and dance as well?
I I only dance at the end, but okay. I have to sing these kind of religious preacher
right,
songs.
So everyone really, there's a bit of physicality and vocals to all of these characters,
yeah, yeah.
Isn't there?
No, definitely.
Aveen Boyle is the reverend's wife. Hi, Aveen.
Hello.
How are you getting on?
Good.
What's he like? Is he all right as a husband?
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah, all right.
That's
okay.
Strict.
Very, very good. Very. And you're going to be singing for us as well now, aren't you?
Yes, I
right,
am.
So are you stepping into this role, or does your character sing a lot in the show?
My character sings, she has two songs, but she's like kind of the peacekeeper, so it's kind of her,
yeah,
her like speaking out.
Brilliant, good stuff. Listen, we're going to hear a couple of bits. So which one should we hear first? Is there an order teacher that might be best?
James,
are you, what is your song?
I'll be singing I Can't Stand Still, which okay. is one of my main songs for the musical.
Right, okay. So I'm going to, well, now we're working off backing tracks. We didn't get an opportunity to go through this, so we're going to wing it, right? That's the fun way of doing it? Okay, so here is Mark James Bradley, the lead character, Ren, and I Can't Stand Still.
I never walk when I can run. I don't believe I ever could. People try to slow me down, saying, boy, you really should kick back and chill, but I can't stand still. I called the doctor, he said, son, I cannot offer you a pill. So I never found relief, and now I got to move until I've had my fill. I can't stand still. Back where I come from, life's never humdrum. I wish I could take you there. Oh, we have the world at our feet. Life is sweet, ain't no doubt. Grab a seat, check it out. Oh, I thought it never would end, but I lost it somehow. Would you look at me now? I'm trying hard to tone it down. Gotta watch my P's and Q's. Maybe look before I leap. And then I think, hey, what's the use? Ain't done it yet. And I can't forget how it feels when you dance till you drop. So don't even start to suggest that I stop. I never will. I can't. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. I can't stand still.
Well done. Excellent stuff. Fantastic. Good stuff. You can sing, Mark. Who's the teacher that doesn't really want to speak standing at the back? Who's that?
That's Roisin.
What's Roisin's role?
Music teacher.
Roisin, you're going to have to come forward.
She's our assistant musical
I'm just not going to... I'm not going to... No, don't coyly lean in. What's it like working these with the... I mean, we want to hear more, but I mean, obviously from Mark James there, you know what I mean? There's obviously an inherent talent there, so...
They're a fabulous bunch to work with.
Must be lovely sort of, you know, where you see the talent... Or maybe you spot it and they don't see it in themselves. I'm not talking about anyone in this room, you know, bringing them forward, building their confidence. It must
Absolutely,
be a lovely thing to be involved in.
Oh, it's great. Like, and I mean, some of these, majority of them are my music students, but I do have a few in here that don't do music. So Ryan, for example, we kind of coaxed him into it. And he said, I don't sing. And then you're going to hear him in a minute. He's excellent. Like, he's a great singer.
Brilliant stuff. Well, thanks so much. So, Ryan, do you want to go next? What are you going to sing?
I am singing Mama Says.
All right, okay. So you get in front of that mic, Sunshine, and we'll get ready. Right, this is Ryan Quinn, who plays Willard in the Footloose musical, and this is Mama Says.
Everything I've ever learned that gets me through the worst, well, I learned at my mama's knee. Now every time that I turn around, well, I turn to mama first. And you be wise to memorize what mama says to me.
Mommy ain't been wrong. I'm the living proof. Mama says don't use a toaster while standing in the shower. Now Uma knows where it's at. And Mama says it doesn't matter if you're a kid, if drive a hard bargain or drive around town. Once you drive a mountain, you can't. Once you drive up the mountain, you can't back down.
Well, God, they gave you a tough one there, didn't they? All right, okay. Listen, the voice is fantastic. Well done to you. Well done to you, Ryan. Okay, so let's talk tickets then. What's the story, Anita?
Well, we start off, Greg, on Tuesday night. We have a special opening night offer. That's Tuesday the 14th, so it's just €10 cash at the door. And then from Wednesday night to Saturday the 18th, you can get your tickets on Eventbrite for €15.
Brilliant stuff. And there's a huge interest already, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Saturday is really well sold.
Brenda, so, you know, tickets are going to be going out the door. Don't leave it to the last minute.
Don't leave it to the last minute. That's right. Come to us on the Tuesday night and give the kids a great big start. The tenor, it's great for family that want to come a few times. I want to give a big shout out as well just to the school themselves. Like, we have huge backing in the school between Margaret O'Connor, our principal, and Miss Mullen and Mr. Scott. They row in behind us. They do, at the moment, Mr. Scott is building the props. The stage is just after landing. The big lorries are being emptied. The atmosphere is amazing. So please come and support us. We have art departments, woodwork departments. We have people selling tickets. We have people making the brochure, etc. So it's a whole school event. So please come and support us, please.
It's the people working behind us. You've already referenced there, building the stage, getting the sound right, the lighting, just to make sure that these incredibly talented young people shine as brightly as they can. Right, let's talk to Aveen now. Aveen or Aveen?
It doesn't really matter.
It kind of does because it's your name. Yeah. All right, okay. Aveen.
Yeah,
let's go with that, right? That was my instinct. So you're going to sing Can You Find It In Your Heart?
Yes.
All right, can you switch to this mic? Because then we can see you better. Okay, is that all right?
Yeah.
I'll tilt this down. 1 second. Where is my... There, okay. Because Ryan's quite tall, you see. All right, so what's this song about?
It's kind of about how she's always the peacemaker and then she's kind of like... trying her family to be a family again after having a big loss.
All right, brilliant. Okay, well, here you go. Here's the track.
Can you find it in your heart to forgive her? Can you stop and see there's part of her that's trying to obey? While part of her is dying to run away, can't you hear what she's trying to say? Can you find it in your soul to accept her? If she stumbles on your holy path, do you have to reprimand? Or are there ways to make her understand? Joy that we shared at the start. Can you remember?
well done.
Thank you.
Musical songs are strange old things, aren't they? With the, because you really have to, like, you all did fantastic, but it's where you sing and where the music stops and where it comes back in. It's amazing how you track that and do so very well. Well done. So that's that done. Now you can just relax and enjoy the show. All right, okay. And there's got to be an awful lot of proud mums and dads and guardians and granny and granddads there as well too. So the show kicks off with a special reduced rate of a tenner. That's Tuesday, October 4th, cash at the door. And then it runs Wednesday, October 15th to Saturday, October 18th. Tickets €15. Doors open at 7. Show starts at 7:30. And Brenda, it's a great night out, isn't it?
It's a fabulous night.
It'd be very easy for us to sort of frame it as, you know, support the kids and all the effort. But, I mean, they're putting on a proper show. So, you know, it's a proper good night out too, just in case people haven't been to something like this before.
I suppose, as Anita said earlier, we really do pride ourselves in bringing a high-class production to Milford, to Loretto, and we've done, so this is our 10th production actually. Myself and Anita have worked on 10, and Roisin has worked with us, and we also have Mr. A. McKay, then he'll be our director, and a past pupil of ours, Helen Haughey, then is our musical director. They all come on board, and what also, and a past pupil this year has joined us in choreography, Nisha Loon, and they're doing a great job. And we also then have a live band as well, Greg, which really adds to the whole atmosphere. Yeah, yeah, it brings it alive. So it is hard. They did very well today with their backing tracks. But come and see them in Loretto when the stage will light up and the band will take off and the lights hit them and they
They all did absolutely fantastic. And the quality of singing is top. It's top class. So well done to everything, to everyone. Right, okay, so a particular thanks to Mark James, Evine and Ryan, and also all the rest of you. You won an award recently too, Ryan, too. Congratulations on that. Wasn't it? Yeah,
it was me, yeah, thanks.
Okay, yeah. Right, so fair play to you in relation to that as well too. All right, good luck to everyone at Loretto Community School Milford and their interpretation of Footloose. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having us.
Okay, back with more shortly. We're going for Milford, I suppose, now you could say, to Castle Finn, because another very talented lady in front of me is Louise Grieve Doherty. Louise, thanks so much for joining us.
Greg, thanks very much for having us today.
Louise, for those of you who aren't aware, is chairperson of Castle Finn Autism Friendly Town. And I'm sure the town and all behind it very proud to announce the official launch of its Autism Friendly Town initiative. So before we actually talk about the launch night and what have you, what is this project?
So it's a programme under As I Am, the autism charity. So I seen online in June that they released the programme with Eric Roberts and Permanent TSB. So they're offering towns in Ireland to be autism friendly and to be inclusive for all their community. So I thought Castle Finn was the ideal town to do it.
Well, so you just saw this and you decided to run with it?
Well, I went to Mary Killen and Mary Dunyan in the town and said to them, what do they think? Thinking they would run with it. So they said, I will go with it if you come on board. So we are, well, and we're going to do it. So I think it'll be great. And Castle Finn's a great support town.
So why is this seen as important?
Because I have a son who's autistic and the community is great and making him feel included. And most places are making people with special needs included, but they're not recognised. So the As I Am charity is doing the programme. So I thought it would be great because Adam is definitely a member of the community in Castle Finn. So I thought it would be great if we could get together and praise the town for the work they're doing.
Yeah, so I presume the part of this too is, Louise, is it that it's an opportunity to recognise the places that are doing things well, where it's welcoming.
Yes.
But also then when that's done, and it's often through a lack of knowledge, not a lack of will, other places go, okay, well, you know, I didn't realise that. Maybe we can up our game. And then you get this more autism-friendly space.
Yes, and everybody's included. Although it says autism, there's people out there with just sensory needs or whatever it may be, and everybody falls into the same hole, so we can help everybody. So a lot of businesses are doing it. Like sometimes they just need an extra couple of minutes.
Yeah.
That's as simple as that. And some businesses are doing it and didn't even realise. To be autism-friendly, you don't need to build a big sensory room. Yeah. And, you know, you just have to give a wee bit extra time. Maybe have a chair. If they feel overwhelmed, take the chair, sit down, take a couple of minutes and move on. Or have fidget boxes. So that when maybe the parents are doing the shopping in the local shop, that the child can play with a fidget box and they're safe and mum gets a chance to do the shopping without, you know.
And that makes such a big difference to mum's life.
It definitely does. You know, that's another thing. Also, we want to get together with the parents and see what they want. And maybe if we get the youth clubs and stuff up and running for them, that they get an hour out to talk to somebody else, maybe just ask somebody's opinion on something. You know, somebody else maybe has already been through a certain thing, like tiring, dieting, behaviour issues, whatever it may be, or just have a chat to another adult.
But it also means that people are seen as well, right, so that you don't feel, or a person doesn't feel, not to make it personal, that you always have to have someone to look after your child.
Yes.
That they can actually come out and be accommodated in the community.
Yes.
So you get the bonus of getting going around the shops, but also, you know, it's integration, is it?
Yes.
It's a proper inclusion.
Aye, and the parent feels that they bring the child. They're not trying to organise themselves that, oh, I can't go and do this because I need a babysitter or whatever. That they can go and the child can be included as well as the parent.
Yeah.
Sometimes with the special needs children, the parents forgot about. So we want to try and include them too. It's very community led and very going to be led by the people and the parents and the groups.
So it's an opportunity for the local businesses, organisations and people themselves to learn.
Yes.
Effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because knowledge is power, isn't it?
And it's open to everybody. You don't have to be a business. Yeah. You don't have to be a community group, you know, but the positivity we've got already from all the different groups within the town and individuals as well, that they want to help. Mm. A lot of people are more than willing, but they're feared to approach.
Yeah, but I like the fact that very quickly you pointed out, look, we're not looking for an extension and a second story. You know, this is about incredibly simple things that just can make someone's life a little bit more easier. Is there other little things or even major things? You talked of the fidget boxes and things like that, there, or the extra time or a chair. Are there other things that we don't do that we could be doing if we just knew it was the right thing to do? I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you know what I mean? Obvious things that a family with someone with autism within it comes across on a regular basis.
Just giving them a bit of extra time.
Yeah.
And if they do have a meltdown, not to be standing, looking and staring and all the rest. And, you know, me personally, when I see the meltdown now, I never see the child. I think about the parent.
Yeah, yeah.
And think, you know, I'd love to go over and tell her it's all right.
I know, but I've been there.
She's under enough pressure, him or her. I keep saying her, but it could be him too.
It's perfectly fine.
They're under enough pressure.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to help. So as to get them out to a place where there is a meltdown in the corner, nobody passes an aid because we've all been there.
Yeah, it's understanding.
That's all it is.
And you know, a child can have a meltdown with or without autism too. So anyone could be in that position, right?
Yeah.
But it's about not looking judgy or tutty or humming or haring. And another thing too, I find that it's nice to have a little bit more patience in, is in a cafe or a restaurant or something along those lines.
Or even just asking, like a waitress even saying, do you want that in separate plates? You know, because sometimes they just don't like their food touching, or maybe they just like it on separate plates. So although they might be have sausages and eggs, they just want it in two plates. So if you feel sometimes you can't ask that question.
Okay, let me drill down on that. Or someone said to me once, and I nearly got sick, let me double click on that. You'll never hear me say that, really, right? So say you, and I'm just saying you, it doesn't have to be you, right? So you go into a restaurant or a cafe, right, and you have a child with you that has autism. Is it the right thing for the waiter to sort of recognise that the child might have autism and maybe lead out with a question like separate plates, or just be accommodating and sort of say, is there anything, you know, additional that I could get for you? Because I think often that's, how do you approach that? Because you don't want to, you know, misdiagnose or what have you.
So, and make an assumption on
exactly
somebody.
Yeah, assumption. So,
no, I would say, and unfortunately, it has to be on the side, I think it does be on the side of the waiter or the waitress. Mm. They just ask the question, do you want all that together on one plate or do you want it separate? Yeah. And they might look at you and go, all on the one plate. And you go, well, that's all right, I've covered that. But then somebody like that would say, could we have it in the two plates?
So it makes sense to the family that need to hear that. And
yes,
it's just a strange question or not even a strange question.
Why wouldn't we have it in two plates, you know?
Yeah,
but
of course.
Unfortunately, you have to be able to read the situation. And there are some parents that are more than happy to be acceptable and go, oh, that's great and all the rest. And some other parents, no, I don't want to be.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. So the launch of Castlefin, the official launch of its Autism Friendly Town initiative. It's on Thursday, the 9th of October, which is the day after tomorrow. It's at 7:30 p.m. in St. Mary's Hall, Castlefin. And this quite literally is a case where everyone is welcome.
Everybody. Yeah. Everybody. And we can't stress that enough. Everybody. We will learn from everybody. Mm. If, you know, there's different aspects from everybody's point of view, with people, with children, adults, relatives or whatever will learn from everybody. So we want to see, and we want that hall filled. We want to show William from As I Am will be there to give a presentation.
No, I didn't know that, folks. Right, okay. Yep. I'm talking on to the people of the Castleford and surrounds now. As I Am are going to be there, so we genuinely need St Mary's packed out. Yeah,
so there he's going to be there to show.
That shows intent. That's the real first step. That's stage. Really, what? This is an autism-friendly space.
And they definitely are. You know, they definitely want to be involved, so it's just about getting bums on seats.
Right, okay.
So William will be there to give a talk on what we need to make Castlefont autism-friendly is champions. So a champion is making their business, their community group, or their whatever they're involved in, autism-friendly.
Mm.
And all that is maybe having a fidget box, being inclusive, and maybe an hour's training. Either online or in person. It's nothing difficult.
Which means a person grows anyway, even in the learning process. And so after this meeting, is Castlefin an autism-friendly town?
No, we're just launching.
It has to reach a bar, and then it can be officially labelled and recognised as such. So that's something to be...
And hopefully the first in Donegal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I think, Louise, I get a wee suspicion if you're in any way behind this, you might get this over the line. I'm just getting that feeling off you.
Well,
I've not met you before, but I think so, right?
We're trying.
Okay, brilliant stuff. So, hey, be part of something special. Be part of something that's a first for Donegal. Mm. Get to St Mary's Hall, Castlefin, on October 9th, that's Thursday, at 7:30 p.m. And every family has a person with autism in it, or they're a relation, or a family friend. This is, you know, it's part of our community.
Yep.
And everyone in the community should feel welcome.
Everybody will be welcome. Yeah. We'll be at the door welcoming everybody.
I mean in the community, not at the meeting. Do you know that sort of way?
And even if they don't want to come to the meeting or whatever, we're on the social medias. Just give us a contact if they have any questions.
Brilliant. And the more people involved, the lighter the load too.
Yes, it definitely does. Course, we're always looking for help and funding.
Yeah. All right, Louise. Anything we can do to assist and publicise in relation to that, stay in touch with us. Louise Grieve Doherty, well done.
Thanks so much
for calling in. She's chair of Castlefin Autism Friendly Town. The launch of that Autism Friendly Town initiative is on Thursday the 9th of October. That's the day after tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. in St Mary's Hall, Castlefin. The more people turn up, obviously, the better of an impression it will give and a better sort of sense of commitment to this whole project. And then, hopefully, become the first town in Donegal to receive the official recognition of, which would be a wonderful, wonderful achievement. I'd stick that on a sign at the entrance of the town. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing.
If we get it, hopefully if we get it. And maybe other towns listening to this would be interested in coming on board too.
Like, why not? Okay.
Contact As I Am and get the job done.
But just be a day after Castlefin.
Well, 24 hours is all I need.
I'm only joking. Well done, Louise.
Thank you.
Back with more shortly. It's an interesting old show, this, isn't it? We could go from discussing the presidential election to community garden information to supporting Loretto in Milford in the work that they do, and then back in Castlefin as it seeks to become a autism-friendly town. There's always so much going on, isn't there? And it's great to be a part of it. John McLoone's a vet at Bluestack Veterinary, Donegal Town and Ballybuffet. John, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for asking us on.
Right, you have a challenge, don't you, in trying to keep a continuance of the great service that you do, and it's a staffing issue.
Yeah, well, as you say, it's the service. It's the 24-hour service that we're kind of struggling to keep up, because we're just struggling at the minute to find experienced large animal vets. And I think from speaking to my colleagues across the Northwest and indeed across the country, I think it's the same everywhere.
Obviously, the vet school will start taking in students from September next year. Obviously, we can do nothing about between now and then, per se. Are you confident in the industry, John, that that will in time lead to more people being qualified and to work in this area?
Well, we have concerns. A lot of people have said to us, oh, you'll have no shortage of vets now with two new vet schools in the country. But no, we still have our concerns about the availability of predominantly large animal vets, you know, and guys that joining the veterinary college and that's going to stay at large animal as well as mixed practice.
Mm.
I think in my experience the last number of years, we seem to be losing a lot of large animal vets in the industry, and they're either leaving the industry altogether or focusing on their small animals, you know.
And I think the professor, though, in charge of this course might have recognised that. And he seems to be designing the course with more practical elements, more hands-on stuff. So, you know, I think that was recognising the fact that maybe once qualified and out, you know, out on the job, so to speak, that people maybe they don't have the stomach for it or they don't want to be at it. So hopefully that might address some of the issues that you're referring to. But anyway, this is an issue between now and whenever that might happen, John. So what do you think needs to be done or could be done to address this issue?
Well, the first thing we just seen floated on social media and the local media there that there was ideas floated that they were going to save some places for ag students, you know, an ag graduate. And I just thought that was actually a very good idea and it would help the longevity of the large animal vets coming in, because myself came from an ag background and a lot of my colleagues that are still in large animal would have came from an ag background. And we're just probably, there's an opportunity there to get more ag graduates in on the veterinary courses, that they just might have a better chance of the longevity of the career in large animal. What I'm finding is the new grads are coming out and then they're just gravitating to the smaller animals, you know, and maybe just could do with just retaining them vets and large animal vets a bit longer.
Why would someone from Ag Science be a better fit or part of the solution to this issue? I know you've went through that, but it's just to explain to listeners more generally, John.
It wouldn't be that they were a better fit or anything, but there would be maybe their initial interest would be to, when they went to ag route, agricultural science route or something like that, like myself, you know, that they have the initial interest in farming and large animals and so on. So there is an argument to say that they're going in more with their eyes open, that it's a 24-hour job in terms of like calving cows and lambing time in spring and so on. They seem just to be more going in with their eyes open, I would say.
Yeah, Dr. Gerard Rorty, obviously a very vocal vet and was very vocal in the importance of attracting a veterinary school to this area. Dr. Gerard Rorty, I mean, you're at the coalface too. You know firsthand, don't you, that this is an issue, what John's talking about?
It's a massive problem, Greg, so much so that I'm even coming out of retirement to help out different veterinary practices at weekend to calve cows and do sections. We have a major problem of sourcing cattle vets, large animal vets in Ireland, and that's the reason myself and the veterinary working group over the last 10 years lobbied very hard for the two new vet schools. Thanks to Charlie McConnell, specifically, we've gotten a brilliant vet school coming to ATU. ATU have done brilliant work. Professor Patrick Pollock, as the new appointment, is incredible. I mean, I don't think we grasp how good a signing he is. Think in terms of Letterkenny Rovers or Lagan Harps getting somebody like Arsene Wenger to come to be their manager, or Leeds from Sligo getting Jim McGuinness to be their county manager. He was a fantastic signing. We've had the capital announcement. Everything has been good. Unfortunately, one thing that hasn't really pleased me is the fact that we're proposing to stay with the same admission system. So I listened to Professor Pollock and he talked about the fact that they're going to work with the point system and a modified HPAT with situational awareness tests. So I think it was Albert Einstein that said, if you do the same thing all the time and expect different results, that's insanity. So if we just get two new vet schools and have the same admissions criteria, we'll continue to produce vets who won't go into cattle practice and will go out into small animals.
What do you believe the solution is it sort of holding off a certain amount of spaces specifically for this sector? Is it drawing on people from an ag background? What do you believe would be the solution?
Totally from an ag background. If I was to reflect back on the 30 years or so that we employed vets at the Animal Hospital in Donegal, the people who stayed in cattle practice and give decades of their life to cattle practice were people from a farm background. So you somebody like John McLoone that you're talking on the phone. So John's an ag graduate, and John's like hundreds of ag graduates who went off to Eastern Europe, qualified in Eastern Europe, came back and went into large animal practice. And what's very disappointing is that the Higher Education Authority at the Joint Oireachtas Committee went on record to say that they were quite happy to see the new vet schools allocate places for ag graduates. A graduate entry, something very similar to grad entry for medicine in McGee. Now, I talked and I've discussed this with the farmers and the farmer organisations, because those are the people that are going to suffer. So the likes of the president of the IFA, Francie Gorman, the vice president of the IFA, Alice Doyle, president of the Irish Nature and Health Farmers Organisation, they're all in favour of places being reserved for graduate entry for ag graduates, because the proof of the pudding is that those are the people who will stay in cattle practice. Mm. The people who will graduate, who have come out of hothouses where there's points, you know, they've been to grain schools, they've been to hothouses where they can get hothoused for the HPATs and the points. They come out, they do a couple of months in cattle practice, and they do small animals, and we're no further forward. And I think I've said in this programme before, out of the 27 brilliant post-primary schools in Donegal, where they educate kids, give them an opportunity to do sports, to do music, extracurricular activities, I can only think of four of those schools which have got kids into the point system, because you're competing with grain schools charging 20 grand a year to mm-hmm. hothouse kids. So if we are going to not be in a situation 5 years in time from now where graduating people are just going to leave Donegal to go off to small animals, we have to have graduate entry at 18.
Okay. John, what are you going to do in the interim? I mean, obviously you continue to seek the maternity cover, but you know, at the moment you're drawing a blank. What do you do then?
Yeah, well, sometimes you're at a crossroads. Like, the problem is, I was saying that the large animal vets, including my colleagues that we talked to that's running large animal mixed veterinary practice, they're taking on too much themselves, and they're maybe talking with burnout. And my fear is you're going to lose the existing vets that's there trying to put on the service. Like, if we don't get the help, it's a 24-hour, 365, you know, we'd have to pull back on the service, which is not our first choice, not ideal, but it will definitely be discussed about as a last resort option. If we, if it was one person, you know, with a young family can't supply that service, you know, and other practices are fighting the same. You kind of need the manpower and the experience on the end of the phone when the farmer needs it. So, as I say, we can't supply the service. The next option would be to start pulling back on the service.
Which is one thing you don't want to be doing.
No, it's a balance. And obviously, if you have to run the business as well, and you have to balance of paying your staff and paying your vet. But as I said, if you do need a balanced rota in this day and age for a work-lifestyle balance for everybody, you know.
All right, John, thank you for the time. That's John McClune, vet at Bluestack Veterinary. Dr. Gerard Rorty, before I let you go, you heard Professor Patrick Pollock, who you speak very highly of, outline his plans. Is it within his gift to look at some of the suggestions that you are making?
It's very specifically, and for that reason, at the Joint Oireachtas Committee debates, we very specifically asked Cathal Crowe, the Fianna Fáil TD in particular, very specifically asked Dr. David Wall of the Higher Education Authority, would he allow the particular colleges at this stage, I think it was expected to be Limerick and SETU, thank God, go to ATU, would they allow them to do graduate entry and reserve agricultural places? He's on record. If you Google it, you'll see he has said that, yep. So I think at this stage, given that the farm bodies, IAFA, INHFA, ICMSA, are so keen to ensure that they've got a cattle service and that they support ag graduates, I think it's for the lobby for both the farm organisations, also the schools. Mm-hmm. You know, the schools here have to sit up and make the argument that there's not a lot of point in having all these kids from Donegal wanted to do veterinary if they're not going to have the opportunity to have a balanced playing field. I mean, if you look, for example, arguments across the Wafer in Britain, they go out of their way to ensure that kids from all schools get access to the various vet schools. Yeah. You know, they do not work on a point system of first past the post. And I was a wee bit disappointed, you know, there's no modification other than the HPAT. The HPAT is a situational awareness test. It's been discredited. The Irish Times, actually, a few months ago, have said that places like UCD Medical School are pulling back from it because they realise it can be game too. Mm-hmm. It's another test that you can do grains for. Mm-hmm. So I think if we're going to have our vet school in Donegal, we need kids from our schools in Donegal who are going to work for the likes of John McLoone to be able to get into that factory.
Okay. All right. Interesting comments as always. Thank you very much indeed. That is Dr. Gerard Rorty there. Professor David Kenny is Professor of Law at Trinity College Dublin. He's with me now. Good morning, Professor. Thank you so much for your time.
A pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, I understand there was some investigation as to whether or not Jim Gavin could be removed from the ballot paper. That proved to be a negative.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do that. So the electoral law is really, really clear about this situation. Basically says that once nominations have closed for the presidency, which happened a couple of weeks ago, then there is no possibility to withdraw. The show must go on unless a candidate dies, is the only way that an election is postponed or the whole thing is reopened. So it's really extremely clear on the point. There's nothing you can do. Jim Gavin has to remain a candidate. And overnight, it looked like the government and the department was looking at a very obscure part of the electoral law, a sort of an emergency provision to alter a ballot. I think that would have been quite legally questionable, to be honest. Mm. I think the conclusion they've reached, which is that his name stays in the ballot and technically he remains a candidate, is the correct one as far as the law is concerned. But it does lead to the strange situation of someone's no longer campaigning, no longer wants your vote, but is still a candidate for president.
And I think if there were 8 or 9 candidates, this would be perhaps, you know, less of a story, although the story in itself would be. But it's the fact that there's 3 and 3 becomes 2 and it could be relatively tight. I presume once ballots have closed, no one can be added to it either.
Yeah, because nominations closed, I think, on the 24th of September. So that means that there's no possibility of Jim Gavin being replaced. The list is closed and that's it. There's no possibility of reopening it. The election has to be run on the nominations received. So this is the situation, and it creates a kind of unprecedented situation of people will be able to cast their votes for Jim Gavin. Those votes will be valid. If they transfer to another candidate and he's eliminated, then the votes will transfer to that other candidate that people vote for. And even in theory, he could be elected president.
What does that
mean? Enough people vote for him.
Yeah. And do you know what? It could be a very interesting 2 or 3 weeks, because you could find people who are like, you know what? That's not a big enough deal. This man's been dragged through the dirt. I'm going to vote for him anyway. Or there might be those that say, wouldn't it be great to embarrass Fianna Fáil by... So there's a number of reasons. As well as that, if the spoiling of votes is at the scale that people anticipate it to be, you just never know the quirks of this situation. So say he wins. What happens?
So it is a strange one. And people might, you know, instead of spoiling a vote, they might, you know, vote for Jim Gavin instead as a strange protest vote. You never know. So it's possible that either his transfers prove crucial to putting one or other candidate over the line, or, you know, it's not inconceivable that he could win. And if so, I mean, he has to become president, if only for a day. So the law is clear. If you're the candidate that receives, you know, over quota, you're the first candidate across the line, you are duly elected president. The Constitution says you take up your office the day that your predecessor steps down. So when Michael Dee's term ends, he would become president, and he would have to decide either, I suppose, to stay as president, which seems unlikely given that he's, you know, decided to withdraw, or resign. And if he resigned, the Constitution says we have to have another election within 60 days to elect a new president.
And that's exactly why I'm anticipating soon a massive push to get him over the line to trigger another election so that those who are opposed to the 3 candidates can try and get other people on. I think that's an inevitability. And heaven forbid, if another person were to fall out of the race and there was only one active candidate, I presume all the same rules apply other than, God forbid, someone passing away.
Yeah, exactly. And there have been uncontested presidential elections before in Ireland. It's happened that there's only been one candidate put forward, and it's not a problem. From a legal point of view, that person is essentially elected unopposed. So that, you know, that could have happened. You could have only had one candidate on the ballot paper. But if, as has happened here, we have multiple candidates, the election has to go ahead. So even if one of the other candidates withdrew, we'd still have to go through a voting process. The machinery is now in motion. Those ballots will be voted on election day. And so that's just going to happen now, no matter what else happens. As you say, unless, God forbid, someone were to pass away, then there is provision in that same act, the 1993 Act, for restarting the whole process. So it's only in the event that someone dies, you can understand you need to restart the whole thing and start the nominations process again. That's the only way that this election isn't going forward.
All right. Okay. We've had a few people asking if Jim wins, what happened. You've just outlined that. Obviously, there can be a bit of a lag in people texting in. Fascinating. Sure. I was going to say only in Ireland, but I'm sure it's not the case. I'm sure you could pull out a number of fine examples of strange things that have happened around the world. But for now, we must leave it there. David, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Bye-bye. So that's Professor David Kenny. So what happens if Jim wins? Well, he's elected president the day after, or the day Michael D. Higgins is no longer president, and he either stays in the post, which is unlikely, as we heard from David there, or he resigns and there's another election in 60 days. It's going to make some very interesting online conversations, I think. Hey, everyone, have a fantastic Tuesday, will you? We're going to be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.